Okay, get ready for this. Next up, the scary states of America with Michael Teitelbaum. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. Michael Teitelbaum has been a writer and editor of children's books, comic books, and magazines for more than 20 years. His fiction work includes novels based on Avatar, Spider-Man, Batman, Smallville, and Justice League. His nonfiction work includes books on baseball and the history of radio and television. Michael's latest book is The Scary States of America, a collection of 50 stories of the paranormal, one from each state. Michael has always had an interest in this, despite a rather normal childhood. And here he is this hour on Coast to Coast. Michael, how are you?
Hey, George. Great to be back with you.
Likewise. Been a while. Man, the clock ticks. It's been about 2 years, I think, right?
I think I was actually on last October. This is, I think, our third chat.
Second, third. Yeah. Okay. That's it. Time flies, Michael.
It sure does.
How have you been?
Doing very well. Keeping busy. Been maintaining the website and blog, The Scary States of America, and continue to collect amazing stories from people all over the country. I've also been doing a little traveling. I've appeared at a number of schools where I get to read some stories and talk directly to the kids, and that's been a terrific experience.
How did you get the 50 stories? How did they come to you?
I did a lot of research. The initial 50, there were way more than 50. Reading in newspapers, magazines, on the internet, just gathering people's experiences, trying to get a variety of types of paranormal experiences, the whole realm of that world beyond that which we take for granted, including ghosts and spirits and visitations, UFOs, alien encounters, Bigfoot cryptid encounters, dreams, premonitions, out-of-body experiences, the whole range. And there was an amazing range. And as I started to collect them, I realized that these type of things happen everywhere. They happen all across the country. And that's when the idea of presenting it in a 50-state format hit me. And I said, all right, let me pick my favorite or the most compelling story from each of the 50 states and put it together, was fortunate enough to get it published as a book. Since the book's publication, I've maintained the website in which I ask readers, and actually within the book, I ask readers to go to scarystatesofamerica.com and send me your experiences. Have you ever had an experience with the paranormal? And I've gotten many, many, many experiences, once again, from all over the country.
Oh, and I bet they just keep coming, don't they?
They do. They do. It's every day, every week, there's new experiences, and they're all unique. I mean, there are some threads, there are some similarities at times, but they really are individuals' personal experiences with the paranormal.
We won't have time to go through every 50 state story, but we can pick out a few from your book and chat about them.
Great.
And get everybody's reaction perhaps a little bit later on, Michael.
Great.
In selecting the stories from the state, did you have to pick like the best one from a state? Maybe you got five stories in from Michigan, for example, and you had to pick just one. Is that how you did it?
Yeah, pretty much. The main factor for me was what made me kind of go, whoa, what was a story I would like to read? And I think that's a key part of writing and storytelling is, and I think every writer wants to tell a story that he or she would want to read. And that was sort of the criteria. So I started narrowing it down. All right, this is the strongest one from this particular state. And then as the book was coming together, I wanted to make sure there was a variety, so it wasn't overloaded with one type of story. So there were some cases where perhaps I said, well, I'd like to use this one, but that gives me too many ghost stories. And so this is a little bit more unusual. Let's go with this one. There was some fine tuning going on, but for the most part, it was what is the strongest story that grabs me that if I opened up a book like this would compel me and draw me in?
All right, let's talk about some of them, and let's grab a few states that you've had some experience in. I'll let you pick the states, Michael.
Oh, okay. Well, I got an interesting story from Virginia about a girl who went off to summer camp, and on what she remembered particularly was a Tuesday night. She had a very vivid dream about her best friend. They were in her kitchen, they were cooking, and what she remembered mostly was that her best friend, who was a boy, was wearing a really weird outfit, a plaid hat, a green striped shirt, bright blue shorts, and it was an outfit she had never seen him wear before. Well, she wakes up the next morning and she's a bit dazed because the dream was so vivid, but she just kind of shrugs it off as a weird dream. We all have strange dreams. That night at a campfire, she suddenly gets a sharp pain in the side of her head and felt exactly like somebody smacking her in the head, but no one actually hit her. And again, she thinks it's weird, but she tries to forget about it. A couple days later, she goes home, and when she tells her friend about the dream, he freaks out because he tells her that on Tuesday, the night of her dream, he was wearing a plaid hat, a green striped shirt, and bright blue shorts, which was an outfit he had just gotten as a hand-me-down from an older cousin. And then, intrigued and amazed, the girl tells him about the feeling of being smacked in the head the next night. And again, the friend is stunned because during a play fight with his sister the following night, she smacked him in the head. So the girl who sent this in feels very strongly that there is a tremendous telepathic connection between her and her best friend, between people who are actually close. So
I like that.
that was intriguing. People who are close, that there's something even that distance can't separate. And in this case, that connection, that telepathic connection, came through to her in a dream, which was really kind of interesting.
Did you find that there are some states that get the more paranormal stories than the others?
Yeah, there are. California is a pretty paranormal state. Pennsylvania has a lot of stories. I think my guess is the ones that send me the most may have more to do just with the size and the population. But those are two of the most frequent states that I get stories from.
All right, give us a California story.
Ah, California. California is a story about shadow people. And each of our last couple of chats, we've talked about that. There was initially a story in the book, and last year there were a couple. This is a story about a boy who got thirsty at night and went downstairs to get a drink of water when he noticed that the door between the kitchen and the garage was open. He just thought his parents might have left it open so the dog could get in and out. But then he saw someone or something moving in the garage. It appeared to be a shadow moving along the wall. And he said when he wrote to me that he wasn't really sure why he didn't just run away or go get some help, but he felt this strange feeling that he was compelled to go into the garage where he had seen the figure. So he stepped into the garage, and what he saw was a human-shaped figure, but it was made of a black mist, is how it was described. And then he discovered suddenly he could no longer move. He was sort of paralyzed. His hands went numb. The figure just seemed to be staring at him. And as he was there frozen, he was wondering if it meant to do him any harm. But then, just as quickly as it had appeared, the figure moved and it vanished. And the boy felt fine after that once the figure had left the garage, but he swore he would never go into his garage alone after that. And as we talked about last time, the shadow people sightings is one of the most common paranormal experiences because they tend to appear in normal places. People see them at home. People see them out of the corner of their eye, and many people, maybe most people, shrug it off. Oh, it was a shadow, it was a cloud of something. But then there are those who have those face-to-face encounters where there is a physical reaction, where they're frozen in place and they can't move, and that seems to be a pattern, and that's what happened to this boy from California.
These people who are having these experiences, Michael, do you think in most cases these are real, legitimate experiences, supernatural for sure, as opposed to their mind concocting something or they believing they've seen something?
Well, that's, it's interesting because that's always the big question. in a paranormal experience that's only experienced by one person. Some of the more compelling ones are where two people are together and they look at each other and say, did you see that? Did you see that? But in most cases, someone is alone. I think there might be a certain percentage of cases where it was just a shadow or a bird or a passing cloud, but I also think that there's just been too many of these reported sightings with specific details and similar details. These creatures seem to be take on a human form, but they are featureless, so they have the kind of outline shape of a human, but they don't have actual features. They've also been reported to have glowing red eyes or something on the head that appears to be a hat, which is very, very odd. And time again, the report is the same. They get frozen in place. So I think that they are either a glimpse into another reality, another dimension, or even a figure caught in the wrong place. Not that the shadow person has evil intentions or wanted to come into our world or wanted to confront any particular individual, but somehow got lost, if you will, and is in our world and is just as panicked and freaked out as the people it encounters because they can't figure out how to get back to where it really belongs.
Pick another state here for us, Michael.
Okay, let's go to Utah.
Utah it is.
Utah. Well, driving on a highway.
Nothing scary happens in Utah.
No. Well, I do have a few.
All right.
This husband and wife witness a terrible car crash on the other side of the highway. Well, they speed up ahead and find a spot to turn around and go back to see if they can help. But when they get back to that spot where they had seen the accident, there's nothing there. Nothing. No car, no debris, no tire marks, nothing. And this is a case where they both saw exactly the same thing. So they knew they hadn't imagined it. They weren't hallucinating, yet the road was clean. Well, the woman who sent in this story said that for years, every time she passed that spot, which was not far from where she lived, she got a terrible feeling of doom and sadness, a really deep, visceral feeling. Yet still, there was no visual evidence that anything happened. Well, 15 years later, the woman's brother, who was a state trooper, got a call about an accident in exactly that same spot. Someone had reported the accident, and he was sent out to investigate. But when he arrived, just a few minutes later, once again, there was nothing there. And he thought, well, maybe is this a hoax or some sick prank or a crank call? But when the trooper shared his experience with his sister, and she relayed what had happened to her 15 years earlier, the only conclusion they came to was that at some time in the past, there had been a terrible accident in that spot. And now when conditions are right, whoever is there gets to witness it again. And this seems to me to be an example of an event that's so traumatic, it leaves its own energy signature. It leaves a lasting impression on the place where it occurred, so that even over the years when there was nothing visual, when she didn't glimpse it again, she got a very strong kind of gut feeling of being uncomfortable and being sad, and then later on it reappeared to somebody else. So I thought that was a kind of creepy and odd one.
When you hear these stories, Michael, what does it tell you about what's going on, not only in this country but this planet? These bizarre stories.
Oh, there's definitely a huge world beyond, as I like to say, beyond that which we take for granted. Most people assume what you see is what you get. This is the world I can see. But there's so much more, and I think it manifests itself in all different ways, whether it's an individual moving through a particular place and witnessing an event like this that left its energy mark, or a haunting in a house where a spirit refuses to leave and new people come in, and encounter that, I think that's what attracted me to the paranormal, got me starting to collect stories in the first place, is there's just so much out there. So many people experience this, and that's been one of the kind of fun and rewarding things about doing this, is I hear from so many people, especially kids, who say, here's what happened to me, but nobody believes me. my friend says I'm crazy. My mom says, oh, stop making things up. But so it's sort of an outlet for them. It's a place to send their story where they will be taken at face value. Because, again, the classic question in a paranormal event experienced by one person is, did it really happen, or did it occur in the person's mind? And that's the tricky part. But to me, the sheer numbers of events around the country, and as you say, all around the world, to me, it is more than massive coincidence. I think some are more attuned than others to what's going on, sort of beyond the natural world, the physical world, the world that you just see and assume, oh, take for granted this is a normal thing. There is a lot going on, and many people see it, many people experience it, and this is kind of a place to become kind of a clearinghouse. Mm-hmm. I like to call it the clearinghouse for the strange. But true.
No question. How about Wisconsin? What's your favorite story out there?
Oh, well, this one took place on a very snowy, windy night. They have a few of those in Wisconsin.
Yes,
and a woman was driving home on a country road and squinting through the snow. She's driving very carefully, of course, to not get stuck or skid. She's out in the middle of nowhere, and she approaches an intersection. She slows down as she comes to the stop sign. She notices on one side of the intersection is a community center, and across the road is a tavern. Well, she's looking through the falling snow, and she sees a man outside waving his arms frantically as if he's signaling her to stop. He wants her to stop, like he needs help. She thinks maybe this man had an accident. But she's so startled that her car begins to skid, and she slides partially into a ditch. So she gets out of the car to find this man, because now she needs his help to help get her car free. But when she gets out, there's no sign of him. She looks around, nothing. She looks for footprints in the snow, figuring she could follow him, but there are no footprints in the snow except for her own. Well, she gets back into her car, and she manages to rock it back and forth and back and forth, and she frees the car from the ditch. She manages to drive home safely, but she's furious at what she believes to be a prank. Who would do that under such terrible conditions? Well, 5 years later, she happens to attend an event at the community center at that very same intersection. And inside, she sees a collection of newspaper clippings on a bulletin board with headlines like, "Ghost plays with traffic at intersection," "Ghost throws plate and glasses in tavern," which was across the street. And so after sort of holding on to this anger for 5 years, she realizes that she was the victim of an ongoing haunting and was not the first one to have encountered the ghost at this intersection.
And that happened in Wisconsin. We're going to come back in just a moment with more stories with Michael Teitelbaum. We'll also get a live update from Richard C. Hoagland monitoring the La Crosse moon mission. Less than 3 hours or so, we're going to be blasting the moon. We'll be back. We'll be back with more stories with Michael Teitelbaum in a moment. Richard C. Hoagland, our science advisor and head of the EnterpriseMission.com, monitoring the situation, because in a little less than 3 hours, we'll be blasting the moon. Richard, what's the latest?
Fin A goes into slot B, and I have to put C into slot D. George, have you got a left and a right wing nut over there that I could borrow?
How do I get it to you?
FedEx?
You're fixing your telescope.
I'm trying to put the telescope on the mounting plate on the tripod so that when I wake Robin in less than 3 hours, she doesn't say, Where's the telescope?
Just go to the Coast to Coast website and look at the link that Lex has on and just relax, put your feet up, and just watch it that way.
You know, look.
I know.
There comes a point where if you can, you gotta. And we can see this with our own eyes. It's an incredible, crystal clear night here. You can almost reach out and touch the moon, George. Oh, I'm sorry. You have rain where you are?
How about like 34 straight hours of rain?
Oh, my God. Have you called Noah?
Noah, the cave is starting to flow. City of St. Louis.
By the way, the other night after we did the show, KTRS called me. They want me to talk about lacrosse.
Yes, They woke me up in the wee hours to get your email and phone number.
Well, they should have had a phone number because we missed it this week, so we'll do the aftermath next week. Now, look, we're 3 hours, minus 3 hours, 2 hours and change and counting now.
Everything working well?
Everything's working perfectly, and I've just been looking at the backstory. When we do something next week about what happened and what we see and what we know, the story of how these guys pulled this off for $79 million. I mean, that's not even one little small community bank anymore. It's just absolutely miraculous. I mean, this thing, if it works the way it looks it's going to work, is just a technological NASA miracle like the days of old, like the old NASA I used to know and love and the guys that I worked with who made miracles happen and made them look easy. This is going to look easy, and it's not. It's been incredibly hard for these people, and they will deserve a tremendous round of applause if they pull this off, which it looks like they're going to.
It sure does. And I've got to tell you, I have gotten so many emails after you were on with me, people saying, we're going to blow up an alien base. I mean, the theories abound on this, Richard. They're everywhere.
Remember, I'm the one who's saying it's not aliens. It's us.
It's us.
It's a segmented section of humanity that diverged after World War II, if Farrow and I are right, that is basically using extraordinary technology to plunder, to ravage, to, you know, piratize the ancient technologies on the moon. And our government is trying to catch up, and that's why Bush announced, you know, return to the moon, on to Mars, why the president, President Obama, is going to make some major announcements in the coming days after this event happens this morning. Because we're going back in a big way, because finally it looks like we've got some folks that understand that, you know, control of the solar system is in essence control of human destiny, and for 40 years we've been asleep at the switch.
Let me ask you one quick question. Your updated version of Dark Mission, your book.
Oh, now there's an incredible coincidence.
Let me ask you, the update includes what?
The update includes 50 pages and tons of new pictures, including three sets of amateur images of ruins on the moon near the North Pole. The poles are where the ruins are the least destroyed, which is, of course, why La Crosse is impacting near the South Pole. They're looking at ruins, among other things, and we'll go into this in greater detail next week. The point is that in Dark Mission, this summer, having no idea what the water results were going to be from the scans that were reported last week, we put out this new version, which was published on Tuesday, the 6th, and in it are these images of amateur photography from Earth with amateur telescopes the same size you can see this impact tonight or this morning. That three separate amateurs image these amazing ruins, and everybody who looks at them says, oh, my God, they're ruins. What's incredible is that the highest concentration of water that NASA reported on the moon last week is right over these ruins, which are in Dark Mission in the revised edition, our New York Times bestseller from a year and a half ago.
All right, less than 3 hours, Richard, less than 3 hours. We'll see what happens. I'm not going to be able to see it live in St. Louis. The rain clouds are too thick. You will be able to find it and see it in Albuquerque. I'm going to watch it on the coasttocoastam.com website. Richard, thanks. And we'll be back in a moment with the rest of the stories, The Scary States of America with Michael Teitelbaum on Coast to Coast AM. Michael, first of all, The Scary States of America, where do we get your latest work?
It's available on Amazon.com. Might be the easiest way to get it. It's also in all major bookstores, Barnes & Noble, Borders, independent bookstores. You can go to Amazon and put in ScaryStatesOfAmerica.com. Or if you go to the Scary States website, which is scarystatesofamerica.com, there is a direct link to Amazon there, making it easy to get the book.
What was your book on baseball, by the way?
Oh, I did a two-volume encyclopedia on the Baseball Hall of Fame for Grolier a few years ago, which was a lot of fun. It gave the history, kind of the history of the evolution of the game, a history of how the Hall of Fame came about, and then profiles of all the different players who are in there. And I'm a big lifelong baseball fan, and it was great fun for me to dig into to all that information, especially some of the really old-time guys.
Absolutely. Okay, let's pick another state here. How about Ohio?
Okay, Ohio is a story about a ghost in a basement, and I actually have gotten a number of these. There are certain places and garages, basements that are just kind of creepy by nature. This was a tale sent to me by a girl who moved into an old house with her family. And shortly after moving in, our parents tell her to go downstairs and clean the basement. She was bored. She had nothing to do. She really didn't want to, because, of course, who does? But she finally agrees, and she heads down there. Well, she works for hours, placing books and papers onto shelves, cleaning up and organizing the mess. And things finally are looking good, and she heads up the stairs. And as soon as she turns off the lights, she hears a huge crash. She flips the lights on and runs back down the stairs, only to discover that the books and the papers and everything she had neatly stacked have been thrown everywhere. The place is a bigger mess than it was before, and it wasn't simply that a bookshelf fell over. It looks as if someone had come and just flung things all over the room. She thinks, how could this have happened? Who did this? She was totally alone. She looked around. She searched around. There was nobody there. And then she heard a low, angry voice, kind of a growl, and she could make out the words saying, get out. Well, she ran upstairs to her parents, told them they had to come down. But when they came downstairs with her, everything was back, neatly stacked on the shelves. So this is one of those classic cases of, well, did it happen or did it occur in the girl's mind? And in her mind, it was extremely, extremely vivid. But again, it's an event that only one person experienced. So it's very, very, very hard to document and to prove when only one person experiences it.
And of course, you must have had a big one out there in New York, a big story. Huh?
Yeah, yeah. Well, this was sad, but also kind of sweet. And it involved a little girl whose dog died. And the dog had been in the family for as long as she could remember, for many, many years. And the whole family was very upset, naturally. They decided to go out to dinner. Figured maybe they could cheer themselves up a little bit, do something special. But driving along to go out to dinner that night, the girl and her parents were crying the whole way. They were just terrible. The dog's death was really a blow to the family. Well, as they were getting close to where they were going, the girl looked out the car window, and she looked up, and she saw in the clouds the exact shape of her dog's face, very specific, a long snout,
weird,
floppy ears, and big eyes. So it wasn't just any dog, but it was her dog. She felt a little scared, but then she had a real feeling of comfort that came over her. So I like that story. Was it her imagination? I mean, we all can see things in clouds, but the fact that it was so specific was the thing that caught my attention. And for her, it was something that did offer her comfort. So it was very interesting.
Michael, what attracted your attention, the scary ones or the heartwarming stories when you were trying to put this together?
Yeah, I tried to get a balance. I think everybody assumes, you know, if it's a ghost story or if it's any story about the paranormal, the point is to terrify you, or that the presence or the spirit or whatever it might be is evil and has a bad intent. And there are a lot of those, but I really liked a lot of the stories where whether it was a spirit from another plane or even an extraterrestrial visitor rather than coming to do harm or take over was there for a benevolent reason. And I was kind of attracted to those, and it opened me up to realize that the realm of the paranormal is very big and very wide and is not always terrifying and evil and scary, even though, you know, it's often portrayed that way in movies and the like.
Indiana, what do we have there?
Well, Indiana, I'm glad that you went there, because that's a very good example of this type of thing, where the spirit is somewhat benevolent. And this took place actually 30 years ago. It was sent in by an adult about when he was a boy. And his family moved into a house that had been around for many, many years. While sleeping in his bedroom, his closet door kept opening by itself every night. It would open by itself, and it went on and on, and he couldn't explain it, but it was driving him crazy. Well, while talking to one of his new neighbors, he learned that the family that had lived in the house before his family had a teenage son, almost exactly his age, who was unfortunately killed in a train accident 2 years earlier. He also learned that his bedroom is the room that had been the dead boy's bedroom as well. So he started to think that this was possibly the spirit of this boy. Well, one night, the closet door opened, and the boy got so scared and mad and just was tired of this going on that he started screaming into the closet, yelling the dead boy's name, which he now knew, and just telling him to please leave me alone. Well, after that, the door never opened on its own again. He started to think, wow, he really heard me. He really communicated to me. But then he started to get curious and wonder, well, why would the spirit of this dead boy keep opening the closet door? Why was it that? Why was it specifically the closet? So he decided to look around. He went in, and there was a rug on the floor in the closet. He pulled it back, and one of the floorboards popped up. Hidden underneath the floor was a cigar box filled with odds and ends, an old watch, a folding knife, pictures of friends and family, old birthday cards, the kind of stuff anybody might collect, nothing of great value, but just sentimental things. Well, it turns out that the younger sister of the dead boy went to the same high school as the boy who found the box. He decided to give her the box. It was her brother, and she got very emotional. She was very, very touched. And then a few days later, the dead boy's mother actually looked up this boy, found him, just to thank him for giving the family back the box. It meant a lot to them to have mementos of their son, and she actually gave him the folding knife from the box as a thank you. He tried to say no at first, but she insisted it would make her feel better. And now, 30 years later, as a grown man who wrote in, he still has that knife. But he never did tell the dead boy's mother or sister how he found the box. So I like that story because I took it to be the spirit doing something kind for his family. He wanted this new boy to find this box and hope that somehow it could get back to his family so that there was some symbol, a memento, or reminder of their lost son. So that goes in that category of the a benevolent spirit contacting the living for a positive reason.
I'm curious to see what you picked for Illinois.
Oh, well, Illinois is also a somewhat sweet story, and it's about a connection with a girl and her grandfather. And the grandfather was very, very ill. He was in the hospital. Well, on the night that he died, the girl woke up in a cold sweat and a panic at 3 o'clock in the morning. The next morning, she learned that her beloved grandpa had died at 3 a.m. that night in the hospital. Well, later that day, she actually saw the image of her grandfather in the room. And he spoke to her, and he said, I will always be looking out for you. And then he vanished. She couldn't see him anymore. Well, the next morning, the girl woke up. There was a cardinal singing outside her window, and which is not that unusual, but it kind of hopped on the window ledge and started to approach her, which was a little bit strange. And then it hung around, and it was singing and staying and even singing at night, which is very unusual for a bird. The bird looks right at her. It continues to sing. And she reported that every day it comes to visit. Now, it's now been 3 years since her grandfather died, but the bird still visits every day. And she firmly believes that it is the spirit of her grandfather keeping his promise to look out for her. Another case in which a loved one or someone has such a strong connection that they do cross back over and keep an eye on her. And she was greatly comforted and felt that even though she couldn't have him there as the man he was still somehow connected to her life.
That's a great story.
Yeah, I like that. It's one of my favorites.
That's a great story. Only time for maybe one or two more. Michigan, what'd you have there?
Michigan is a crop circle mystery, another area that's fairly common. And this mystery began in the summer of 2003. A farmer in Hemlock, Michigan, found two crop circles in his field one morning. And as often happens in these cases, there were no tracks or paths leading to or from the circle. One was small, about 4 feet across, but the other was 50 feet across. But the really odd thing was that the grain stalks were intricately woven together, forming the four compass points, but they were hidden under a top layer of grain, so you had to move that away to see this intricate weaving pattern. Well, later that summer, the girl who sent in this story was visiting her sister in the nearby town of Howell, Michigan, and looking out her window that night, she saw six or seven white lights in the sky flying in a boomerang formation, which really kind of freaked her out. But if that wasn't enough, the next morning she discovered two identical crop circles to the one that she had heard about at the other field, a small one and a large one in the same pattern. And having read that story, pushed aside the top layer of grain and saw that same intricate weaving pattern. And again, no path or footprints leading to or from. So there's been much talk, many over the years, about crop circles, and a number have actually been proven to be hoaxes. But I found this one fascinating because how long would it have taken for people to weave grain in almost a lanyard-type fashion in the dark and do that? And coupled with the fact that she saw these unexplained lights in the sky, was what really intrigued me in this particular case.
Great stories and great selection of these stories, Michael.
Oh, thanks. It's been a lot of fun.
These are the kind of stories you can huddle up in bed or by a fire or maybe even out by a campfire and read them, huh?
Yeah, that's my hope. Is it something that people enjoy? You can read the whole book straight through, or you can pick a particular story. Most people go to their state first, which is pretty natural. It's something that's easy to go on a camping trip, take with you. As I said, I try for a lot of variety and a lot of fun.
Well, very good. Thank you, Michael. By the way, on our next program, musician John Fogerty joins us. He loves the paranormal. He'll be our first hour guest in our Los Angeles studio, followed by Open Lines on Coast to Coast AM. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe.